Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is John Morgan Wilson. Wilson is an award-winning writer who has written prolifically in the fields of journalism, fact-based television, mystery novels, and screenplays. His byline has appeared in many newspapers and magazines, including the New York Times, the Los Angeles Times, Entertainment Weekly, Writer's Digest, and The Advocate. But John Morgan Wilson is probably best known as the author of the Benjamin Justice mystery series, which won the Edgar Award from Mystery Writers of America, as well as three Lambda Literary Awards. The eighth in the Benjamin Justice series, Spider Season, was recently published by St. Martin's Press. I'm talking to John Morgan Wilson by phone from his home in West Hollywood, California. John Morgan Wilson, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Tish. It's good to talk to you again.
Yeah. Now, I want to begin with the beginning. You were the captain of the varsity wrestling team in high school, which is also when you began to what you call dabbling in writing. Now, what attracted a star athlete to journalism?
Well, you know what happened was I actually ended up wrestling in college, too. I was a captain there, and I started out at Michigan State. I dropped out after my redshirt sophomore year. I came home, and I felt that the local paper wasn't covering wrestling well enough in Southern California, which was a real hotbed of high school and college wrestling then. And I had the naivete to drop in at the Daily Breeze, which was our community paper, and to tell them they needed to do a better job of coverage. And he said, if you think you can do a better job, there's a typewriter over there. And I foolishly thought he was serious, went over and started typing, and a few hours later gave him a piece, and he said, this isn't bad. You want to be a stringer for us? And my piece was published 2 days later on the front page of the sports page with my byline, and I couldn't believe it. I was 19, and it really changed my life, and he taught me the basics of journalism, and I was a stringer with that newspaper for 6 months, changed my major to journalism, went back to college, and I've been writing ever since.
That's amazing. I didn't know that story about you. Huh. That's great.
And a few years later, I was publishing my own little newspaper, Easy Reader, in Hermosa Beach, an alternative. I started it in 69, and it's still being published nearly 40 years later.
Wow. So that little joke you thought he was playing on you turned out to be a career.
Yeah, he was just being sarcastic, and I took him seriously, and it literally, I had never thought of being a writer before that, and I'd never really done any formal writing, but my mother was an English teacher. I'd always been pretty good at writing in high school and my freshman college classes, and there I was. I was on a new career path.
Ooh, so chance is a big part of a lot of people's lives. Now tell us about how you came to segue into writing mystery novels.
Well, I worked as a journalist for, the next roughly 30 years. I mostly freelanced. It became my goal to freelance when I was in college, and another chance class I took was a freelance magazine article writing class, and I did real well in it. And I knew at that point that I didn't want a job if I could help it, if I could avoid supervision and bosses and time clocks and all of that routine. I knew I really wanted to be a writer, and I knew I wanted to freelance if I could. So I freelanced most of the next 30 years, although I ended up on staff at a couple of newspapers, including the LA Times for a while. And when I got to be 50, I had moved from television. I'd left the Times and gone into television writing and didn't want to go back to reporting. Knew that television writing was a pretty decent living, but that I didn't really like it all that well because it's not really a writer's medium. And I was about to turn 50, and I had a real serious talk with myself and said, at this stage, at 50, you better decide what you really want to do with your writing and do it now. And I knew that it was novel writing that I wanted to do, and I had an interesting experience. A friend of mine, just a couple of years before that, had said to me, have you asked me if I'd read Walter Mosley's Devil in a Blue Dress, which was a very successful mystery novel. And I said, no, I don't read mysteries anymore. I loved them as a kid. I loved them as a teenager. I read hundreds of them because they were always around the house. But I gave up on mysteries a long time ago. They're too formulaic. They're too too slight for me. They don't hold my interest. And he said, oh, you've got to read Walter Mosley's Devil in a Blue Dress. It's completely different. And I got the book and read it, and it kind of blew me away. And
oh, yes.
I came to realize mystery writing had just changed tremendously in recent years at that time, and this is back in the early 90s.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I said to myself, I wonder if I can write a mystery novel of my own that's as serious as this. I certainly wasn't comparing myself to Mosley, who's one of my favorite writers.
Oh, yeah.
He's writing the E.Z. Rollins series.
Yeah, the E.Z. Rollins. E.Z. Rollins has become part of our culture, even. It's quite amazing.
Yeah, it is, and he's just a fine, fine writer, regardless of genre. And there are a lot of, I discovered then that there were a lot of mystery writers who were just fine novelists, regardless of genre. And, you know, you can go back in time to people like Graham Greene, who wrote suspense and mystery novels, but was taken as a serious literary writer. But if you look at today's writers, Dennis Lehane, Ruth Rendell, George Pelicanos, Mosley, and others, the genre has changed and opened up, and I realized as a gay man, I might be able to write a serious mystery novel reflecting my own feelings, background, culture, the way Mosley was able to do as an African-American.
Mm-hmm. So how did the character of Ben Justice begin to formulate in your mind? Tell us how he was created and began his life on the pages.
Well, you know, At first I just had this idea that I wanted to write a fairly entertaining mystery with this gay character I had in mind, who was a washed-up newspaper reporter who had been a brilliant investigative reporter as a young man but had destroyed his career by fabricating sources for a series of articles that won him a Pulitzer, and then when they were exposed, of course, it destroyed his career and his reputation. That's about all I knew, and I did do an outline for my mystery story, but I never saw it becoming as dark and as serious as it became. But as soon as I started writing that novel in the first person, I found the voice of this singular character, Benjamin Justice, and I wrote steadily 15 hours a day for 7 weeks and finished A Simple Justice, my first novel, in 7 weeks, and it was like therapy in a way.
I was going to ask you about that, yeah. And how autobiographical is he?
Well, he's an alter ego, as probably most, if not all, first-person lead characters are for their authors. Sue Grafton says of her character, Kinsey Milhone, I think she says she's the slimmer, braver, more resourceful version of me, or to that effect. Benjamin Justice is the more courageous, burly, and reckless version of me, I guess.
Ben Justice is also complicated, imperfect, and sometimes I have found him even unlikable.
Yeah, he can be very unsympathetic and unlikable at times, and that's just the way he emerged on the page. He's very angry, he's very outspoken, very opinionated, and physically he's a tough guy, and he's kind of the antithesis of the gay stereotype,
mm-hmm,
I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't plan him that way. He just really emerged on the page, and that was the way the character came to be as I wrote those lines, and the book, you know, I finished it never knowing even if I'd sell it or not, but I had an agent already in place because of my journalism. I'd written one or two nonfiction books at that point, and I sent her the novel. She liked it. She sold it to Doubleday in a week, and I suddenly had this deal to write three more mystery novels, and I suddenly had to find out a whole lot about mystery writing.
And about Ben Justice. That's a fascinating trajectory, you know, to get a contract that fast. Now, I find it interesting that Ben Justice is unapologetically gay, as you say, but you as an author don't label your series as a gay series. To tell us why.
Well, it's been labeled as a gay series. It was always a gay niche series. It started out that way, but Doubleday bought it at a time. It was published in 96. They bought it in 95, and they bought it at a time when gay and lesbian and LGBT literature in general was really burgeoning, and a lot of big new writers were coming on the scene, and book publishing thought that a lot of it was going to cross over to the mainstream, and I think Doubleday felt that I was going to be the gay writer who would cross over for them. My first book did win the Edgar Award for Best First Novel for Mystery Writers American. That's a very prestigious award, and the book sold pretty well, and it never did cross over, but that whole crossover phenomenon never really happened for most gay writers. But at the time, I think a lot of publishers thought that was going to happen. And although some people don't label it a gay series, I think most people do. I know that it was categorized as a gay series originally on Amazon.com, and it was always the top seller on the gay bestseller niche list when it came out. I don't really worry too much what the labels are. I just try and write the best novel I can, but, you know, the protagonist is gay. A lot of the themes are gay. It kind of mixes it up.
Oh, it does. Yeah, it does. That's what's so fascinating about it. And that's why I would think it would cross over. Now, do you consider yourself a gay mystery writer, or are you not boxing yourself in that way?
I don't box myself in, but I know that my two core audiences are gay male readers and mystery buffs, particularly female mystery buffs. I found that a lot of, because my books are sexually frank at times, some more than others, straight men tend to be uncomfortable with some of the material, and straight women seem to do much better with it.
I can understand that, yeah.
And so I don't worry too much about the labels, but the fact is, if you write a book with a gay character, leading character, and some of the material is sexually frank and a lot of the themes are gay, you're going to be boxed in whether you like it or not. Your audience is going to be smaller just because a whole lot of people aren't interested in reading that or aren't comfortable reading that, and that's just been true. There have been no gay mystery writers who have ever hit the New York Times bestseller list, with the exception of my friend Christopher Rice.
Oh, yes. And that's the son of Anne Rice, right?
Yeah, son of Anne Rice. Mm-hmm. He did have that advantage coming in that he had the name Rice, and he got a lot of publicity, and he's done very, very well. He's a fine writer on his own, but he did have that advantage. But for the rest of us, it's always been a struggle, but then it's a struggle for every novelist.
Indeed, especially in today's marketplace. Now I want to talk to you about this. Justice ages from book to book as in real time. You know, the youth culture has been such a big dominating force, especially in the gay male community. Was this a gamble for you to age him this way?
Oh, I really never thought about the commercial risks. I just wrote it the way I felt I needed to write it, and write it well, and the way it kind of came from my heart and gut.
But did you consciously decide that you were going to age him in each book, if in real time?
Yes, I did. Mm-hmm. I wanted it to have a realistic, natural feel to it. That was the way I chose to go.
Mm-hmm. I think it's fascinating.
Well, it allows me, you know, when you write a novel, you have to not only think about how you're going to engage the reader, but how you're going to engage yourself. And if the material isn't engaging, emotionally engaging to you, you're probably not going to write it very well. And that was just the way it felt like it needed to be written to me.
It works. I must tell you, John, it works. Now, another main character in your Justice series is West Hollywood in the Los Angeles area. To tell us about how you've come to describe this city that I assume that you still love.
Well, I often tell people I've been trying to get out of here for about 30 years, but I don't seem to. You know, when I started writing the series, I just decided to set my character right in the neighborhood I live in, which is a little historic district called the Norma Triangle in West Hollywood, right on the edge of Beverly Hills. And the house that Dorothy Parker lived in for many years is about a block away. And Dorothy Dandridge's old house is, I can see from my window as I look down the street. It's a real interesting neighborhood. And I decided I just wanted to set my Justice character in this neighborhood, so I have him living in a little garage apartment behind an old Craftsman house. And I want to be able to kind of look out my own window and see his world. I felt if I wrote the world that I knew, I could write it more realistically and authentically in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one reason I set it here. You know, Los Angeles is a fascinating town, but the fact is any city is fascinating. Any place on earth is a place where you can find a story or stories to tell.
Mm-hmm.
The L.A. Times called the Benjamin Justice series West Hollywood Noir, in as opposed to L.A. Noir.
Uh-huh.
It is set in West Hollywood, and it does have that gay ambiance about it.
Do you get letters from fans asking you if some of your descriptions are real?
Yeah, and there's people who sometimes will ask, I can't find that street, because I use a lot of regular streets and regular locations, sometimes historically in the books, and every now and then, though, I'll make up a street for dramatic purposes, and people won't be able to find it, and I'll have to let them know it doesn't really exist, except in the novels.
If you're just joining us, my guest is John Morgan Wilson. He's a mystery writer, and his most famous books are the Benjamin Justice series. John, I want to talk to you about this. How does a novelist deal with some of the other characters that appear in stories and in your book, particularly who might well be versions of real people? Do you have any problems with that?
Well, I have. I've had a couple of characters in the early novels that were, well, one in particular was based on an editor of mine at the Los Angeles Times, Irv Litovsky, who was really my most important mentor and a good friend during a significant period when I was working as a journalist. And the character of Harry Brodsky in the early novels was clearly based on Irv, with differences. And Irv knew it, and he was fine, and he even enjoyed that. Otherwise, I don't. I'm pretty careful to fictionalize characters, although you always take inspiration from this person or that person or this observation or that experience. Usually the characters are a composite or an amalgam of different people you might have known or observed. This time out, my most recent book, Spider Season, which was just published in December, has two or three characters in it that are actually friends of mine playing themselves. One is Topper Schroeder, who owns a spa here called the Gendarmerie, and I asked him if I could use him as a character and set a couple of scenes in his business. And he's a good friend, and he was delighted and seems very happy with it. And I had another friend who manages a bookstore. He's a character, and I have a scene set in the bookstore. But I don't do that too often.
Mm-hmm.
Almost all my characters are fictional.
I have to note that Justice has an abusive father, and you've spoken about the fact that the violent and abusive father doesn't reflect your relationship with your father, but perhaps your relationship with your stepfather. Now, was this a way to work through some of your own demons?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. That was never planned in my book, and that just came out in the writing of a scene when I was writing my first novel. I did grow up with a very abusive stepfather, physically abusive to me, sexually abusive to my sister. And you know, I harbored a great deal of anger and resentment toward him. My sister and I cut ourselves off from him when we were in our 20s and never saw him again, and he died some years back. And this was after my mother died, who had died previous to this. And when I was writing the book, I was writing one particular scene, and suddenly Alexandra Templeton, who is Justice's best friend in the books, she's a younger reporter who's up and coming, and he mentors her in a way. Suddenly, in a scene where she's talking about his past life, because she's done some digging into his past life, she brings this up, and suddenly it just wrote itself on the page in one of the most dramatic scenes in the entire series.
Mm-hmm.
That was in Simple Justice, the first book. And so it really wrote itself. Again, I got in the moment, I got into the character, the flow of the story, and I'll tell you, it was as big a surprise to me as it was to readers. And I looked at it later and said, where did that come from? And I realized it was this anger that I had toward my stepfather working itself out through the writing process. Mm. In the books, though, it's Justice's father who was the abusive
yes,
one rather than
yes.
his stepfather.
Mm-hmm, I noticed that, yeah. Now, did your sister become affected by the writing that you did with that? Were you able to discuss it because of this,
you know,
this writing?
I talked about it and got her permission beforehand, well, even to talk about as I'm talking about it with you. We had, for many, many years, she didn't want this discussed or revealed or made public, but through the own course of her own healing and dealing with these issues, through therapy and other means, she's really come to terms with it and really is happy to be open about it now. I've written about it in the Los Angeles Times, mentioning, you know, the effect it had on her as well as me and other places. And all of this was done with her permission and rather later in life rather than earlier, because it took her years to come to grips with it and to even want to be public about it.
Mm-hmm, I can understand that. So perhaps this was healing for both of you.
I'll tell you, it was therapeutic for me. I don't think it was that healing for her, as healing for her, because she had done so much work of her own before I ever wrote these books. I think it probably was more beneficial for me than it was for my sister.
Mm. Now, are there subjects that you can more easily take on and discuss in the mystery genre that, rather than in general fiction, do you think? Because I know you write short stories.
You know, you can do anything you want in mystery novels now. Almost any subject. I've dealt with pedophilia, sexual molestation, the child abuse crisis in the Catholic Church. That was my fifth book, Benjamin Justice Mystery, Blind Eye.
Yes, that's one of the ones I've read, yeah.
And that was a really angry book, and I think it was one of the better books in the series because it was fueled by strong emotions, which I think is, you know, which often happens in fiction writing. I've dealt with AIDS, surviving grief in the age of AIDS, which became a theme in my first book, Simple Justice, even though I never imagined that emerging, but mm-hmm. it did, because mm-hmm. I was grieving the loss of a lover from AIDS. He died in 1987. And again, when I sat down to write that first novel, I never imagined dealing with that. I didn't think it was going to get that serious, but I got so into the character and into the skin of the character, and I found my voice through this character of Benjamin Justice. These things just started coming out and putting themselves down on the page, and I think that's where the power of that first novel came from.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, could I add that those early novels, including Simple Justice, the Edgar winner, have been reissued finally by Bold Strokes Books, which was actually traditionally a lesbian press run by an iconic author named Radcliffe, and I became her first male author to be on her roster, and she brought Simple Justice and the other books out again in trade paperback last summer, so I'm happy to have them all back
yeah,
in print.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. I'm glad you did, because they were out of print for quite a while, weren't they?
Long time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, because you've tackled so many subjects and you are a very visible gay man, probably, especially in the Los Angeles area, do you have people coming to you for help?
In what way?
Well, because you're able to talk about subjects like sexual abuse and AIDS and loss of lovers and so on. I was thinking people might come to you as a leader, perhaps.
Not too much. I'm very, very active in the gay writing community and the writing community in general in Los Angeles. And I certainly get emails from people. It comes more in the form of younger writers who come for advice and people I can mentor. I've mentored a young writer through Penn USA. I serve on the planning committee of the West Hollywood Book Fair and work with an awful lot of writers and bring writers into various activities that give them more visibility. And I teach writing classes at UCLA Extension, but it's more that way through writing.
Mm-hmm. And I want to ask you about your teaching. What kind of advice do you give aspiring writers in regard to the mystery genre? Did you have some rules of thumb that you pass on to them?
I tend to be one who says rules were made to be broken. I broke a few myself along the way, including the first book, Simple Justice. I broke some tried and true rules, and I thought it worked just fine. You know, I would just advise any aspiring writer, read a lot and write a lot. Read a lot and write a lot. The less you write, the less chance you ever have to find your natural writing voice and develop it. The more you write, the more quickly it will develop. Classes can be fine. You've got to find the right teachers. But mostly it's read a lot and write a lot and try and keep your behind in the chair every single day writing, because it takes a while to develop the skills and find your voice, your writing rhythms, your style.
Did you think it would have taken you longer to get the full richness of these mystery novels if you hadn't been a journalist?
No, I think the reason that I got into it so quickly was I was about to turn 50. I had written at that point literally hundreds and hundreds of articles for major newspapers and magazines, and I'd written and sold a few screenplays. So I had done a ton of writing when I sat down to write my first novel, but I also had a real talk with myself when I sat down to write that novel about turning 50 and taking my writing to the next level, and I worked very hard to kind of tap that unique source of power that is inside all of us, if we'll just find it. It has a lot, I think, to do with not hearing the negative voices that we've been raised with, the critical voices and the critical voice that we sometimes scold ourselves with, and listening to the positive voice, and most of all, just believing in ourselves and realizing we can do it if we will reach deeply and really commit to it. And I think that was probably the most important thing in writing that first novel.
Interesting. Now what else are you working on?
Well, I'm working on a new standalone novel that is totally my own. I'm writing it on spec. Spider Season, as I mentioned, came out last month, and that's my 10th mystery, 8 of them in the Benjamin Justice series. So I'm writing a standalone. I'm also got a couple of short stories coming out in Ellery Queen Mystery Magazine later this year. And I'm always working on something or other.
Mm-hmm. And I understand we only have about a minute left. Were the film rights sold to the Benjamin Justice books, or where does that stand at this point?
Twice, Benjamin Justice series has twice been optioned for possible filming or for television, but it never developed into a full-blown project, never reached the production stage. And I'm always getting inquiries, and I guess it just has to be the right time with the right person.
Mm-hmm. Well, John Morgan Wilson, can you please give your contact information in case anybody wants to get in touch with you?
Sure. If anyone wants to get in touch with me, and by the way, they can also read the first chapter of Spider Season if they'd like. It's linked on my website, which is www.johnmorganwilson.com. Again, that's www.johnmorganwilson.com, and there's a lot of information there about my teaching, my writing, and if they just want to get in touch, I'd love to hear from them.
Great. Well, John Morgan Wilson, we have run out of time. I thank you so much for joining us, and I highly recommend Spider Season, and go back and read all the other novels, too. It's a fascinating character.
Tish, thank you so much. It's been great to talk to you again.
Thank you, John. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. We are supported in part by the Arts of the Southern Finger Lakes in Corning, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. We'll be back next week. I'm Tish Perlman.